You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. And I can tell you that the topic today is such that everybody can benefit from it. So take this time right now, text somebody, shoot them an instant message, tell them that this is a show that they're not going to want to miss. Now, I want to share that in most cases, and especially with this show, my co-host would be Gabriella Von Ray. Now, unfortunately, she is on a plane right now, and she wasn't able to join us. But I just wanted to tell you a little bit about her and about her movement, because it fits perfectly with this show. So Gabriella is the founder of the Dare to Be Kind movement. She's been on the road filming. She's been interviewing not-for-profit associations and people from all walks of life who have taken up the Dare to Be Kind challenge of one act of kindness in a 2-mile radius to highlight to everyone how kindness begins in your own home, in your own neighborhood. Now, the goal is for there to be a television show based on these interviews, and it will showcase people who took their pain and made it into their greatest strength, and the strength that enables them to help others. Now, Gabriella shares through her Dare to Be Kind movement that we can create safer communities, healthier relationships, and make the shift from the bystander syndrome to becoming an active participant in the transformation that occurs when one takes the time and dares to be kind. Now, if you want to know more about that, you can go to the Facebook page, which is Dare to Be Kind Movement, or to the website, Dare to Be Kind Movement. Join in, because as you will then realize when we go into our topic of the day, that that's a perfect fit with what our guest is doing and what we all should be doing. And I'll now not tease anymore. I'll go into the topic of today, which is also the title of our guest's new book. It is The Rabbit Effect: Live Longer, Happier, and Healthier with the Groundbreaking Science of Kindness. I told you. So this book shows that how we live, work, and play affects the body in profound ways, altering our metabolism, our immune functioning, our mental health, and the course of disease. Now, exploring why how we treat each other in our day-to-day lives is critical, and that kindness is a key driver of health. So stay with us as we discuss paradigm shifting and empowering, providing a new way to think about health, wellness, and how we live our lives. So joining us to talk about the rabbit effect is Dr. Kelly Harding. Kelly is an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at Columbia University Irvine Medical Center. She is a diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, as well as boarded in the specialty of psychosomatic medicine. Kelly has spent much of her career working in the emergency room at New York Presbyterian Hospital. She has appeared on The Today Show, Good Morning America, and NPR, and now Answers for the Family. So, Kelly, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, Alan, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. And I am so delighted to be with you and all the listeners out there. Thank you.
Well, it is my pleasure, and I hope that that the listeners will agree. I believe that they will, because we're at a time right now in which there is so much divisiveness and focus on negative that, you know, and I get people that'll ask me, like at the gym, who's going to be on the show? What are you guys talking about? And when I mention this subject, they kind of pause for a minute and they go, wow, with everything else that we're hearing out there, I'm really glad that you're bringing that out. And I do see it as almost like a pendulum situation. With all of this push on the pendulum in the wrong direction, it's just bringing out more people like you writing books like this so that we can swing the pendulum back the other way and get geared more towards kindness and more positive things in life. So thank you for being part of that group that's pushing the pendulum in the right direction.
Well, thank you, Alan. And I would say you're doing the same thing because, you know, we know that, you know, our brains tend to focus on the negative a lot of times, but there are so many good things happening out there as well. And there are so many people invested in kind, good things happening. And I think it's also really important that we highlight those stories and also just know that we're part of something much bigger. So thank you.
Well, and I absolutely agree that and part of being something that's much bigger is we need people to understand that this is where our ears and eyes need to go. If we continue to watch the negativity, if you watch the news and you sit there and you listen to that, the advertisers are betting on that. They're betting that that's what you're going to watch. When you turn that off and you turn on shows like ours or shows like the Dare to Be Kind movement, or you read books or you listen to podcasts, you know, and you study things like the rabbit effect, you're making a shift. And when advertisers see that, they're going to stop putting their money there. They're going to put it here. And that's where we're going to get the biggest shift.
I sure hope so. Well, we're doing our part.
Exactly.
So, and all the listeners out there as well. So thank you.
Yes, yes. So, but at the same time, listeners, pass it on to somebody else. That's how you can do your part. So now the book. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, Alan, I really loved how you started the show too, because that's actually something that I often recommend to people because it just really creates this ripple effect of kindness. And as we know from all the data now, that that's also really good for not only our mental well-being, but our physical health. And that is just, you know, thinking, we've all experienced kindness in our lives and thinking about somebody who's been kind to you. And once you have an image of that person, you know, think about reaching out to them or to, you know, if they're no longer with us, maybe somebody who knew that person and just, you know, send them a note to say, I'm thinking about you. It can be as simple as a text or an email or a phone call or, you know, even meeting, asking to meet up for coffee or lunch or something. But, you know, I think that's one of the, you know, that's been one of the great joys for me is hearing of those stories and how the kindness has continued to spread. And, you know, we're all a part of this big network of people that have been kind to one another. So thank you.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things in regards to the book is, you know, it's one thing for us to tell people, okay, we go, look, it's good for you, be kind. But what I love about the book is that you go into the science of it, and that's where, so we're getting into the mitochondria, we're getting into the science of why this works. So I know the book kind of goes into it, and it's sort of like it's medical mysteries, you know, why does this work? So how did you come to decide that not only am I going to try to spread kindness, but I'm going to research everything that I need so that I can present the medical mysteries as to why it works?
So, Alan, as a physician, I, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about how I got into it. But just to say, first of all, I mean, it is so clear that kindness saves lives. And it's not just, you know, in the rabbit effect, I described hundreds of studies about this. It's not just one. Like, we have ample data how kindness saves lives. And because of that, once I figured this out, I felt so compelled that this was something that we needed to be talking about, you know, not just in our hospitals and clinics or even our schools of public health, but really, you know, in our communities, exactly as Gabriella is doing with her Dare to Be Kind movement. You know, we need to be talking about kindness, you know, in our, like, in the places we live, in our workplaces, in our school systems, and all these different areas of our lives. So, you know, that it's an urgent message. And I think you also really talked about how part of the reason I also felt so compelled to write The Rabbit Effect is because I think it's, you know, it's no secret, we're not doing a great job of it right now in this country. So we need to be thinking about how we can be kinder to one another, because it really impacts our health, you know, both our mental health and our physical health.
Now, share some of the scientific sides of this. You know, give us some of those specifics. And I know there's a lot of great stories, and I'll want you to share some of those. But, you know, let's get right into the science of it and explain why this works. Why, there's different things. You know, people will say, like, in motivational, business motivational books, they go, fake it till you make it, and, you know, all of these different things. Or, if you smile a certain amount, just using those muscles will help change your thought process. But for a lot of people, they don't know what's the science behind that really tells everybody, yes, it really does work.
Well, so we know that kindness buffers stress in many different ways, but the thing that's really exciting is there's this confluence right now, or this synergy between what's happening, between what we know on a population level, looking at, you know, public health data and outcomes, and then also what we're learning about what's happening on a microscopic level, you know, inside our cells and tissues. And it's really neat because, so in The Rabbit Effect, I try to combine all that science that I had been learning and, you know, explain that. So, you know, there are different ways to approach it, but, you know, it's sort of like this image. You can almost think of like a ripple in water almost, with yourself at the center, and then all these different areas of your life. So, you know, a big thing that we know, and I think it's a big topic of your show, is we also know that, you know, there's a lot of pain out there. Mm-hmm. And we now know too that, you know, pain has it has not only an effect on our mental health, but also our physical health. And, you know, you've probably talked with other guests about things like adverse childhood experiences and how that can impact health, you know, decades down the road. But the most important thing is being able to identify that and then also work on exactly what you described in terms of post-traumatic growth. So that's just one example of many, many. But I imagine that's something you've spoken about with other guests on the show.
Well, yes, you know, but sometimes it doesn't always tie right into happiness, but, you know, or to kindness. But I know that, in fact, well, right now, I mean, you know, learning about long-term effects of trauma is now a highly studied topic, and one that we have discussed, you know, on this show. But how does trauma fit into this story?
Well, so in the book, I talk about all these hidden factors in our lives. And, you know, it's the hidden factors that really come down. Like, if we can invest in one thing in our life, it's our, and study after study shows this, it's our relationships and our connections to each other. So by that, I mean that we have ample data that, you know, positive relationships profoundly affect health in a good way. And it not only helps, you know, keep off diseases, but it also helps us deal better when diseases may occur. So just to back up a little bit, so the way I got interested in this, you mentioned the medical mysteries. And what it was is, you know, as a doctor, especially working in the emergency room, I was seeing patients who, you know, for unclear reasons would you know, one patient with who on paper, you know, would look not great, you know, maybe a diagnosis of a serious illness, and then you would meet them and you discover that they're actually doing quite well in many areas of their life. You know, but you could have someone with the same diagnosis not doing well and sort of like trying to tease apart what is it that even with all things otherwise identical, why is it that one person is feeling and functioning so much better than someone else? And then the flip side of that is also seeing a lot of people with, you know, symptoms that would, you know, on paper, they look, everything checks out, but they come in because they don't feel well, or they're not functioning well, and they're feeling like something is wrong, and trying to piece that together. And, you know, this story is a story that is seen over and over and over. So as a doctor, it sort of led me down, if you will, this rabbit hole where I ended up, you know, I thought it had something to do with the mind-body connection. So I ended up, you know, studying first in adult internal medicine and then psychiatry, and I still didn't really have answers. So then I ended up doing actually a fellowship in, you know, mysterious unexplained symptoms that looked exactly at this. And then eventually what happened is I made it over to the School of Public Health once I learned about the rabbit study. And from there, I ended up finding, you know, all this research that showed how we are treated in our day-to-day lives. And again, whether it be in our homes, our workplaces, our neighborhoods, our broader communities, or in our broader societies, is the determinant factor of our health. And just to clarify, so, you know, I think most of us, when we think about health, we think about, like, you know, exercise, sleep, you know, kale smoothies, the occasional trip to the doctor, but we don't always think about what is, in fact, the largest determinant of our health. And as a doctor, I was shocked. It turns out medical care, while it's important, probably only accounts for about 10 to 20% of our overall health. And then, you know, you might wonder, what is the rest of that? Genes play a role, but not as much as we now understand or as we once thought. And then again, the biggest determinant is these relationships that we have. So, you know, just to give some examples about that, you know, there are many, but, you know, there are studies that look at, you know, whether it be like in our homes, especially now that we're in like cold and flu season, we know that, you know, hugs can help keep off colds. There's, you know, studies, bigger risk factor for health is smoking 15 cigarettes a day or obesity, even more of a risk factor than being overweight or high blood pressure. It's actually quite remarkable. These things that we didn't really consider as part of health, now we know that, in fact, they are critically important.
Yeah. In fact, I was just listening to Dr. Mark Hyman, and he was talking about, the influences of loneliness, you know, as it, you know, as it relates to, and that in some cases, just setting up a social group for people to get together, by the time they all got together and started doing things, and they would set it up around something else. They didn't say, we're all going to sit around and talk about what ails us, you know, but it was like, we're going to call it a salsa dancing class or whatever. And that the greater impact than anything that they could do as doctors was already done for them. It goes right to what you're saying.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. So that is a small piece of this much bigger puzzle, but that's exactly it. So we want to be looking at our connections, you know, like so we know when it comes to loneliness, for example, we know, well, one, it's really common. So, you know, for people who are feeling lonely out there, not to feel so alone, there are, you know, we know that some people say it's at epidemic rates. But we also know it's one of those things that we hadn't really identified as such a big issue in our society. And despite all our technology and being uber connected in many respects, you know, a lot of us still feel alone. And we know that it's both the number of connections we have and then the quality of those connections. So I always think of, it was Elvis Presley who said he felt lonely in a crowded room. It's sort of that same idea that, you know, we can be surrounded by people, but we want to do what we can to connect it. So a great way to do that, and it sounds like what Dr. Hyman suggested, is, you know, connecting with people who may have a similar interest as us. So, you know, actually, one of the really cool studies is volunteering actually helps prolong your life, and which is really exciting data because it not only helps who you're volunteering, but just being a volunteer yourself is helpful, and it's and has better outcomes than people who don't volunteer. So I would say if you're thinking about volunteering, go ahead and do it. And some of the studies have shown is volunteering as little as once a month made a difference for people. So we're talking like pretty minimal commitment here, but it's really worth getting out there and doing it. Another big thing that comes up along with volunteering and also can come along with education, which we can talk about, is life purpose. So we now know that people who have a strong sense of life purpose live longer and they do better with illnesses that may come. So, you know, it's pretty incredible. It's because the studies show that they're at reduced risk of all causes of death. So we know that they have like a 72% lower risk of stroke, 44% lower risk of heart disease, and half the risk of developing dementia or Alzheimer's. So, and actually, there's some really interesting data around this, these long-term studies that follow people without a diagnosis of dementia and show that people who reported a high sense of purpose in life also had, even if on, you know, after they passed away and the researchers looked at their brains themselves, and because they'd given permission for that, showed a lot of disease in the brain, they still functioned better and fared better and lived longer despite having this illness, because it seemed as though somehow this sense of purpose was protective. So, you know, think about what you get passionate about and, you know, do it. So, Alan, I would say you are totally doing it with this talk show. So thank you.
Well, and in fact, and I've said before on the show that I've been blessed with multiple occupations that has allowed me to make a difference. And by doing that, it has kept me young. It has kept me healthy. And, you know, again, I just feel that I've been very blessed with those opportunities. So thank you for that. Now, something else that you talk about in the book, because it goes into the area of severe mental illness. And in the book, you talk about how, that unfortunately people with severe mental illness sometimes receive a lower quality of medical care. But the part that amazed me was the statistic was that they are at risk of dying on an average of 28.5 years earlier than somebody without a severe mental illness. Can you talk more about that?
I know.
That number, you know, that number just blew me away. I read it and then I stopped and I went back and I read it again because I thought, no, I misread this somehow. And then I realized that, no, it was correct.
Yeah, so unfortunately, that number is correct, and it's heartbreaking, right, to think about that. Mm-hmm. So here's what we know, that, you know, with somebody with a diagnosis of severe mental illness, they are at risk of, you know, practically three decades of life lost. And, you know, a piece of that can be suicide. So that's one part of it, but it doesn't account for the whole story. So we know that people with severe mental illness are less likely to get quality medical care. So that's a big piece of it. And then the other big piece of it is there seems to be, you know, we know that people with severe mental illness are also at 2 to 3 times the risk of greater risk of things like heart attack and stroke. So there seems to be some sort of overlap between what's happening in the brain and what's happening in the body. And, you know, the big culprit that people are thinking about and that the evidence seems to suggest is probably it relates to inflammation. And we know that stress can be a big component of that, and negative stress. And we also know that stress can be buffered by positive relationships. So, you know, as someone who works in mental health, I think it's really critical that, you know, for people with with diagnoses, and then also for their family members, that they really be aware, because, you know, I think this is also where we bump up against stigma in this country, because, you know, we know that sometimes people who come in, and I've seen this in emergency rooms, when somebody comes in with a diagnosis of severe mental illness, sometimes that eclipses all the other problems they may have. So new symptoms may be attributed to something related to their mental illness when it in fact may not be. So, and that's unfortunately something I've seen too often, even in, you know, some of the best hospitals in the world. So I think, you know, it's something as for the clinicians who are listening out there, it's important for family members to be aware of. And it's also just important for all of us to talk about because, you know, we know that depression is the number one cause of disability around the world, but it's also, there's still so much stigma around mental health and talking about mental health. So we can all do our part. Every single listener can do their part by, you know, talking about emotions, talking about a mental health. And, you know, people are now increasingly sharing their own experiences. And, you know, I think that's the worst part of it is people feel so alone when this is happening to themselves or a family member. And, you know, I think it's just so important, and a big part of kindness is recognizing that we all have struggles.
Well, you just brought up the thing about people talking about their own experiences, and we have an instant message that has come across to us. And again, I want to thank those that take the time either to send an instant message or to send an email or a text or something into us to ask the questions on the air. But this one reads, I think the science you bring is an important piece that makes my story even more powerful. I won my battle with cancer 5 years ago thanks to the love and encouragement of my family and friends. Their laughter, hugs, and tremendous love kept me feeling lifted and positive during my many months of treatment. In complete remission now, the experience led me to a new career working as a counselor with patients dealing with a range of conditions. I just bought the audio version of your book and will be sharing your wonderful message. Best wishes to you for great success with The Rabbit Effect and all of your work. And this is from Gregory in Connecticut.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Gregory. I can't even tell you. That gives me goosebumps to
me
hear.
Too.
And I'm so grateful for that. Thank you. Thank you. And I mean, that's the thing. I think, you know, being kind to ourselves and others, it takes so much courage. Like for Gregory to share his story, that takes so much courage. And it's also, you know, I think the other important message in that is, you know, unfortunately with human bodies, things happen, but it's also how we deal with them and how we help our loved ones navigate the challenges that may arise that make all the difference. And, you know, our time is limited on Earth, so we might as well make it, you know, the best that we can for each other. And we have the resource, and we've got this, like, you know, incredible renewable resource in kindness and in how we treat one another, but yet it's so challenging to tap into so oftentimes. So what an inspiring story.
Yeah, it really is. Now, for everybody out there, the book is called The Rabbit Effect: Live Longer, Happier, and Healthier with the Groundbreaking Science of Kindness. We are talking with Dr. Kelly Harding. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about one of my favorite subjects. We're talking about kindness, and the beauty of this show is that we have Dr. Kelly Harding, and we're talking about the science of kindness and why it improves everything, both physically and psychologically. So now, Kelly, what was my question? So what are some of the everyday things that we can all do, that everybody can do to make a new habit in our lives to create greater positive connections?
So I have lots of ideas on that. Okay. So thank you for the suggestion. I'm going to go ahead and just dig into some of them. And because there are so many, that was actually part of with the book and the Rabbit Effect. I have what I call toolkits at the end, sort of in each chapter to just sort of give suggestions for that particular realm of our lives. And I think, you know, what's exciting too is, you know, we all experience adversity in different areas of our lives. So we want to try to buffer the other areas of our lives so that we can navigate when tricky situations come up. For instance, you know, we know that when people feel supported and connected at home, when things don't go well in the workplace, that, you know, they're able to navigate those situations better. So, and it's the vice versa when it comes to things, you know, like what's going on. If we live in a stressful neighborhood, if we have a workplace that's supportive, that can make all the difference. I do want to talk about workplaces for a moment for Please. Listeners, because it's something that we don't always think about is connected to our health. But, you know, there are these really large population studies known as the Whitehall studies that were done in London and in Europe that have been replicated in many different respects. And what they show is that, you know, it was an incidental finding, but basically they were looking initially at, you know, sort of what increased the risk of somebody's risk of a heart attack. But it turned out the thing that they found out was it was the workplace itself and how the people were treated in the workplace. So we know that, I mean, you just never imagine that that would be, you know, more than like cholesterol or blood pressure. It would be how the person, what, like how much autonomy did they have at work? You know, mm-hmm. what was their ability to engage with things? Pretty incredible stuff. So for people who are out there, maybe in workplaces or volunteer places, every little bit of kindness counts. So think about how you can offer gratitude for the people that surround you and the work that they do. I think a lot of times when it comes to kindness, we sort of say things like, oh, you know, like we all know it's nice to be kind, but I've joked that you could probably throw out a lot of the HR manuals and just rewrite it as be kind. Because in fact, you know, that's really what the data shows. And not only that, but workplaces that are supportive of the human beings that work there are more productive and the people are more creative. They take less sick leave. Some of the companies have even reduced their healthcare expenses by 50%, which is pretty incredible. Wow. So, you know, there's really no downside. And that doesn't mean conflict's not going to come up, but it just means when it does come up that the parties involved need to treat each other with dignity and sort of focus more on the problems and less on the people. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And so we know how important, you know, and just how critical connection is to our health. How do you believe technology fits into this?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, technology is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the thing. We know it's here and it's what's enabling us to have this lovely conversation right now and all your listeners to listen. So there are upsides. You know, I think the other thing is, though, we're sort of in uncharted territory with our relationship with technology. And, you know, now we're about 12 years out from the invention of the smartphone. And so, you know, we've gone through this sort of, and I think, you know, they're calling kids who are 12 and under now that Generation Alpha, basically, because they've never known life without smartphones and, you know, how prevalent they've become in our world. But, you know, the big thing we know is our brains and our bodies are really wired to be face to face. And there's all this like really interesting science I talk about in the Rabbit Effect around, like, you know, like our brain waves sync up when we're talking with someone. You know, we know that like things like touch and, you know, positive touch, like, you know, holding hands with someone we love can reduce pain and anticipation of pain. So there are all these sort of interesting studies around that. So I would say for people who are listening, like, do what you can to lock eyes with the people you love more often. And also, you know, make a point of looking each other in the eyes. Because, I mean, I know, like, I, you know, just this morning I was in a store where I was paying for something, you know, with my smart chip, and myself and the cashier were both, like, looking down at the smart chip and not at each other. But it's like, that's actually an opportunity. These little moments in our day-to-day lives, like, when, you know, if you're, whoever you're getting that receipt from, like, look the person in the eye and talk to them for a second, because every little bit of connection counts. So I would also say, for when it comes to technology, you know, there's so many different studies out there about how things can affect our mental health. But I think the really big thing we all need to do is just put down our phones, like, really try to create a little bit of distance between ourselves. And, you know, it's a slippery slope for people, because it used to be like it was rude to have your phone anywhere near a dinner table or if you're at a dinner. And now you'll see people just having their phone sort of sitting on there. And there's actually studies that distracts us from connecting with the person in front of us. So once I saw all that data, I was much more intentional about putting my phone away, trying to have periods of time without it, like not necessarily checking that email first thing, you know, giving yourself more time. What have you found has worked for you for sort of limiting technology time?
Well, it's some of the same types of things. One of the first things that I had to do was to make sure that at night that I put it at the other end of the room and silence it. Because what would happen is, and especially because in my business, on the adolescent services side or on the investigation side, we can get calls that would be in the middle of the night. But so I used to literally keep it on the nightstand next to me, and it was just a huge distraction. I wasn't getting good sleep. So first of all, it was just move it out of the way and silence it so that it at least doesn't interrupt you. Because for me, when it was on the nightstand, even if I silenced it, the light would flash, and so that would still wake me up. So take time away from it. Don't make it the most important thing. Here's one that everybody could probably enjoy. I don't own any part of this app or whatever, but I'll still tell you, there's an app out there called RoboKiller. And for all of those calls that come in that are annoying of somebody trying to scam you or sell you, it trains itself to the point to where it answers it for you and then weeds them out so that you don't even have to deal with the ones that are that are possibly it. Mine actually comes up and says, scam alert. So it's already identified certain numbers as a scam. So you don't even have to answer it. So yes, there's a lot of things that we can do to limit it, I think, for ourselves and for our kids. But like you said, there's also a lot of great things, because we're now at a point in time to where almost any piece of knowledge is available. I mean, as I'm driving in today, and I was talking to a friend about a relative with dementia, and he said, you know, have you heard about this newest thing? And I said, nope. I said, but I'm driving right now. He said, well, I'll text you the information and you can pull it up on the, computer after your show, and this is some information that he got from another country. We would have never grown as fast as we've grown in the medical area. To be able to defeat a lot of these things, because now we're putting some of the top brains of the world together and saying, look, we found this out and somebody else found out something similar in another part of the world. They can now collaborate and they may, together defeat diseases that we thought that we might never defeat. So, yes, there's a lot of positives, too. It's just, I think it's like everything else. It's you need to balance your life and you need to do it in doses that are healthy for you.
Absolutely. So I think you're describing sort of where it seems like we are in some ways as a society and global society with that. It's like, technology is partly the problem, but it's also partly the solution. And so we need to be putting more of those things in. And you are absolutely right. I actually, I am so inspired by how much information is out there. And, you know, there's sort of, some people joke, it's like the information superhighway's got a lot of litter on it. So you have to be somewhat cautious of where you're getting information from. But at the same time, the possibility of informing yourself about what's going on and in terms of your body and your health and the people you love is incredible. And you know, as a physician, I'm really excited because it's an opportunity to really partner with patients and help them navigate, you know, things that come up. And the other thing is, I mean, and a real reason I wrote The Rabbit Effect is, wouldn't it be incredible if nobody died of preventable illnesses anymore? Mm-hmm. Like, gosh, can you imagine? I mean, it's a big, ambitious goal. But I think the thing is, we need to be talking about prevention because there's so much that we can do to try to slow down things when they do occur, and also think about how we can prevent them. You know, one thing we didn't talk about, but I do want to just mention to listeners, because it's so relevant for every human being on the planet, is education. So we know that education saves lives. I mean, this is a startling statistic, but for every one life saved by biomedicine, we know that education saves eight. And here's the striking thing. Education isn't just formal education. It's lifelong learning. So, you know, we want to engage our brains because it's not only good for our brains, our sense of purpose, our mental health, it's also great for building community. And that can be done in so many ways. So kudos to all your listeners out there because they're participating in this right now by listening to this talk and, you know, maybe sharing some of the information or thinking about how they could apply it in their own lives. And then, you know, the other thing is like dive into topics you're interested in and try to connect with people that are working in those areas. And that's another area that technology is phenomenal because now it's like, if you read a really interesting study, you can, you know, reach out to people that have worked on it, or you can, you know, connect with other people that, you know, for instance, like with what Gabrielle is doing with the Dare to Be Kind movement, you can partner with other mm-hmm. people that are yep. also interested in the same thing. And that is phenomenal. It's a big part of health.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Now, we've got about 10 minutes. And I know I love the fact that we're staying really positive and everything else, but the reality of where we live and where we're at is we're not always everybody's not going to be kind. So what do you do when you encounter unkindness or somebody that's just mean?
Sure. The most important thing to remember is kindness is a practice, and we all have our moments, so we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. And we also know that hurt people a lot of times. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're at the most, you know, in the moment that it's happening, it's important to stay calm and recognize that the behavior may reflect something that you have no idea what's happened in that person's life or in their past. So to be aware of that aspect to it may not and probably isn't about you, to be honest. The other thing is, I think it's important to realize that, you know, the world isn't sort of divided into like kind and unkind people. Like, you know, we sort of all think like, well, I'm kind, but it's really like that guy over there that's the problem, or mm-hmm. my boss, or like my relative. But
right. But
the thing is, we all have our moments, and there's studies that back this up. And in fact, one of my favorite one is called the Good Samaritan study that was done at Princeton University back in the 70s, where it was people who were actually training for the ministry and they were asked to give a lecture about the Good Samaritan. And, you know, they ended up asking the participants in the study that they needed to leave the room they were in and go across campus to give the lecture. And, you know, one part of the group, they told them that take your time, you know, when you get there and give the lecture. The other group, they told them, you're in a rush, they're waiting for you, you've got to hurry over there. It turned out the people who were not in a rush, they as part of the study planted someone who was in need of help, and he was an actor as part of the study, in the path from one place to the next. And what they found is that, you know, here are the students going to give a lecture about helping people, essentially about kindness, right? And that they found that when people were pressed for time, they only stopped to help about 10% of the time. So,
right.
And these are kind people. So I think, you know, that's the thing to keep in mind. Like, time makes a big impact. So do what you can to not be rushed. Be aware you're less likely to be kind when you are rushed. We also know that we're a sleep deprived culture, probably because of all our phones and people looking at their phones late at night, and that actually sleep deprivation and inclination to be kind go hand in hand. So, you know, people who are tired are less, they're more snappy and less kind and less likely to engage with strangers. So, you know, if there is something to be said for like a good night's sleep, for taking your time, being mindful of that. And then also recognizing when things happen, you know, it's not always that the person is bad. It's their behavior that's a problem. And then we need to figure out ways to navigate that. But I think, yeah, there's, what do you do when you encounter someone who's unkind?
It depends on the situation. But yes, I do start out by giving people the benefit of the doubt. But while you were saying that, there was another thought that popped into my mind. And that is kind of for everybody out there, please don't confuse kindness for weakness. And I think that is an issue that keeps people from being kind, because they, you know, somebody else will confuse that for weakness, and you feel them trying to take, you know, they want to take when you were just being kind. So don't confuse those things. I can tell you that there is a lot of people that you would not consider as weak, either physically or minded, that are incredibly kind. So I don't want everybody to keep that in mind.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Alan, because it's true. I think it's a false perception. And it, actually, all the studies, and we know from personal experience, right, that kindness actually takes tremendous courage and backbone and bravery. And the other thing is, you know, conflict is everywhere. Like, I think, you know, the average family has like 8 conflicts a day or something. It's like a lot. So I have 3 boys. So, you know, we see conflict a fair bit. And, you know, a big part of kindness is learning how to navigate conflict in a way that still treats all parties involved with dignity as human beings. And that's really the challenge, is like, you know, remembering all that we have in common, even when we don't see eye to eye, and trying to, you know, create a ripple effect of good and behaved in kind ways despite that. So one thing I often talk about with audiences that I speak with is, you know, we all take math classes in school. We all take reading and probably language classes, but not many of us have taken conflict resolution classes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, conflict resolution is a skill that we can all improve. It's like a muscle. The more we do it, the better we get at it. And, you know, so I would encourage listeners to also think about, you can even just Google like conflict resolution classes, think about skills that they can build to, you know, navigate tricky situations easier.
I think that's a great point. And I can guarantee you that I've needed conflict resolution far more times than I needed trigonometry. So
math is important, but I mean, really, conflict resolution, like, what a different world we'd be in if that was a required course.
Along these same lines, how do you think our current political strategies of a constant barrage of negative attacks is affecting our brains, and what is the science behind their decision to do so?
Wow, that's a tough question. So I would say, here's the one thing that has been a big takeaway of the rabbit effect, and with all this work, is because, you know, you can start at home, and every single person has more power than they realize, you know, whether it be in their home or their neighborhood or right around them. And, you know, I think we can sort of like wait for system changes and more positive changes. But, you know, the thing that seems to be the big takeaway is that, you know, we are the system to some extent. So, you know, think about your own behavior. And, you know, they're now actually, this is a cool thing. Some apps, like I know Nextdoor has done this, where you can actually like, it'll give you a little reminder beforehand, like, is what you're saying kind, you know, or sort of, it's giving you a kindness reminder, because, you know, it's so easy to like come back with something negative, with another negative statement, whether you're on like Twitter or Facebook or something like that. But really, like, think about, you are contributing to sort of where this is going. And we do know that, you know, unfortunately, we know fortunately, we know that negative behavior, we mirror each other with that. So it can easily get out of control quickly, but just as powerful is positive behavior. And that will, when you see someone else being kind, you're more likely to be kind. So, you know, be the change, be that person that's going to do something kind and rise above, you know, the kerfuffle that's going on, because I think, you know, together we can do that. And the exciting thing is there are so, I've been around the country talking with people about the rabbit effect, and I'm just so encouraged by all the positive things people are doing out there. And we've got to be talking about it. So, Alan, you are absolutely doing that with the show, and so are the listeners who embody this. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I couldn't agree more. And the one thing that I would add to that for everybody out there is, and it's something that I do, but it's just to say, I choose not to breathe that in. So whatever it is that they say that's unkind, whatever it is that they say that's divisive, and just, it doesn't attack them. It's just, I choose not to breathe that in, and then go about your business. You know, so in other words, you don't even have to be reactive to what it is they say. And sometimes people will look at you kind of funny, but they don't know what to do after that because nobody's ever done that before. So try that.
Yeah. So that's a good point. And actually that goes along with the other thing is listening, like trying to understand why is it that this person is so upset? Because we know that actually that changes minds when you listen to the other person who's upset.
Yes. So Kelly, thank you so much. I can't, the time has flown by, but that's because you have just been wonderful. So for everybody out there, again, the name of the book, The Rabbit Effect, Live Longer, Happier, and Healthier with the Groundbreaking Science of Kindness. For everybody out there, I truly recommend that you get this. It will help you and everybody around you. And if you do like I do, because I get so many books, is as soon as I'm done, I give them to somebody else. So just keep passing it around and help as many people as you can. So Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure, Alan. And thank you to all the listeners out there. I'm so grateful for all the kindness you bring to the world.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be replaying one of our most popular shows with high energy guest, Allie LaPrete, to discuss the You Got This, Creating a Fulfilling Life and Reaching Your Highest Potential as a Modern Mom. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio. So whichever one is the one that you listen through, please subscribe to our show and leave a response. Leave some sort of a review. Let us know how we're doing. We love to have feedback. I don't claim to be perfect in any way, and if there's anything I can be doing better, I would love to hear from you. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.